The Around the NFL Podcast. 60% G, 25% of the time.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with some heroes. Chris Wessling to my left, Greg Rosenthal to my right. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Welcome back, Wes.
Thank you.
Good to have you in the big chair. Well, it's the same size chair as the rest of the chairs, but you leave a big
It's a power chair, though.
Big shadow.
According to the Mike and the Mad Dog 30 for 30, which I finally watched, you know, you want to be facing the control.
You got to face
the control. So I'm in the weak chair, I get whatever that is, the weakest chair.
Penalty box.
You were in the Mad Dog chair. Yes, we're back together for another week of shows. Saturday night was the big Shield celebration gala at Sessler Manor. Is that why Mark's not here today? I don't know. He seemed to be okay on text yesterday, but maybe he's still in recovery after what was got a little wild at Sessler Manor.
I was the lone voice of sobriety. I do not like this turn of events.
Yeah, at one point Wes was just like, this is all different being the only sober one here. Y'all are funny.
I get that. I get that, how that would be kind of a weird scene. But, yeah, it was a good time and, possibly, a nice way to close a chapter of that book in my life. So
I like how you're going to let this linger on all off season.
Well, you're really stoking the uncertainty. I used some of my intrepid reporter skills to ask some questions.
How many sources?
During the party. No, to you. Well, you were the main source. But, he was playing it on the fence. Not sure what's going to happen next year.
On that fence. Today's edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. Do I have to say it's sponsored by New Era at the top?
Yes, every time.
Okay. Today's edition of the Around the NFL Podcast, presented, of course, by New Era. A lot of stuff to get to. Jay Cutler's back in the NFL. How about that? And you know what? I'm not going to lie. I missed him.
Really?
I like it better that he's back involved. Like he's back in the mix. We'll get into that and what that means down in Miami. We will also now, training camp is about, almost 2 weeks old. A couple days old for the Lions. kind of spinning out of a Greg Rosenthal piece on NFL.com. The winners and losers of training camp so far. And, hey, Lions fans that are coming at me upset that the Detroit's on my radar, hey, just get to camp early. And if you can't get to camp, Greg, I know this one gets on your radar.
Yeah.
Get the team together in a local park in Auburn Hills, throw the football around, stay loose, run some sprints,
Now, have you actually checked to see if Matthew Stafford got some of his receivers together or not?
I have two sources on that so far, but I'm not ready to go live with that reporting yet. So anyway, winners and losers of training camp, hitting all the news, and that's the show today. Before we get going, hi, Sully. How are you, buddy?
Good. How are you guys doing?
How was your weekend?
It was good. Lazy. Relaxing. Yeah. It was nice. I needed one after a big weekend 2 weekends ago, so.
Okay. Well, let's keep that appropriately mysterious.
Yes.
What happened 2 weekends ago with Sean Sullivan? We may never know. Let's do some news.
No more cleats. I'm moving on to smoke meats, fellas.
Yes. The dulcet tones of Vince Wilfork. We'll get to him in a little bit. But let's start with Cutler, who agreed and has now officially signed a one-year contract with the Miami Dolphins, the 34-year-old. Who was all set to take a nice cushy broadcasting gig with Fox. Instead, in the fallout following the Ryan Tannehill setback with his left knee, is now joining the Dolphins. Rap Sheet had reported this on Sunday and now on Monday. It's a deal. It's $10 million with incentives. I think it can get up to about $13 million if he hits incentives. And I'll tell you what, Chris Wessling, like I said, Jay Cutler back in the league. And I kind of missed the guy, and he wasn't even really gone.
Well, we went from one guy who almost changed the Dalton scale to the Tana scale to another guy who's been talked about in this room as the median of all NFL quarterbacks, right in the middle. Jay Cutler is reviled by many people, probably a little unfairly, and over-celebrated by a lot of people.
Oh.
But he's a very average NFL.
Is that a shot at me? Who's he over-celebrated by other than me?
Of course by – well, Damashek predicted he was going to be MVP two or 3 years ago.
I never did that.
Let's hear what Jay Cutler had to say when he was asked about, you know, why you know, how hard a decision it was to come out of retirement.
It was hard. It was hard. It was definitely hard. You know, I, like you said, the last 4 months I've been in a different mode, different mindset, getting ready for the Fox deal. And it was really, you know, pretty good with where I was in my life. You know, I was around the kids a lot and, you know, felt pretty content. So weighed back and forth on this. I mean, I'd probably say my wife, Kristen, probably talked me into it more than anybody else could.
I mean, that is somewhat worrisome. If you're a Dolphins fan, that it was back and forth over the weekend. You know, you want someone that's going to be really committed and ready for it. And, you know, the body language experts were out on Twitter having fun a little bit with Jay Cutler, who looked about as relaxed and cool as he possibly could be. He seemed in a great mood. He actually had he had some jokes. I think that Adam Gase sold him because he knows Adam Gase is the best coordinator for him that he maybe ever had. Yeah, maybe Mike Shanahan as a head coach earlier in his career. I don't think he would have come back in any other situation, and I think he sees this with Adam Gase for a chance. If I'm going to be with Adam Gase, we can make this work, and it actually can be pretty great with all the weapons around him.
I think you nailed it. This is the perfect storm for Cutler. I don't think he would have come out of retirement for any other job. I think it had to be Adam Gase. It had to be a Dolphins team with more offensive talent than they've had around them in a long time.
You know what's funny, Wes? I thought the same thing, too, on Friday, actually, when it was starting to look imminent that he was going to end up in Miami. I tweeted that this could not have worked out better for Jay Cutler. He nailed this. And Rapsheet kind of came at me and was like, well, he didn't have any other offers. And then I said, well, was he really looking hard for a job? And then Rapsheet said yes. So apparently he really was trying to get onto a team, and nobody wanted him. The Jets wouldn't even return his call. What does that tell you? But the fact that things all ended up working out in his favor, this is the ideal situation he could have picked. It's just the way things worked out, the football gods smiled down on Jay once more.
I, for one, am very happy that he is no longer being blackballed.
Yeah, people – trying to compare Kaepernick and Cutler in this situation, it's a tough comparison because Cutler has the year with Gase. I think the Dolphins, first of all, are more interesting with Jay Cutler. Jay Cutler, this is a fun story. The NFL is more interesting with Jay Cutler. As much grief as you want to give him, he certainly makes some mistakes. He's a fun player to watch. If you just made a top 20 – you know, best throws. If you made a top 20 best throws of Jay Cutler's career, it's up there with any top 20.
If you're a defensive back, he's a fun quarterback to watch.
Okay, but he was different under Gase, really, in 2015. He was controlled. He had fewer interceptions than he's ever had.
He was over-celebrated.
He was a little over-celebrated, but they had so many injuries. That's why people got excited that his stats were actually about as good as they ever were for him, despite an awful group of players around him that were hurt. I think the Dolphins might be a better team with Jay Cutler than they were with Ryan Tannehill. Maybe you don't have the hope that Ryan Tannehill turns into someone else that he hasn't really been in his career. That hope is gone. You kind of know who Jay Cutler is, but you might actually be better. This is not a, hey, we lost our starting quarterback, now the season's over. To me, they were a mediocre looking team beforehand, one that if things break right could make the playoffs, and they are the same team today with Jay Cutler.
I think you could argue their ceiling's higher because of Cutler's a better quarter. He's a more gifted quarterback than Tannehill, especially in arm talent. But he's also, if this season starts to go sideways, you're talking about a guy who had to be convinced to play football. He's not going to want to answer to anyone.
No, he'll be. It's a one-year deal, so they didn't over. The money's pretty nice, but they can get out of it and have Matt Moore in there and have Jay Sullen on the sidelines if it comes to that.
When he has to stay healthy too, he hasn't practiced all offseason.
And by the way, his passer rating. Some people put, you know, not too much into that, but he had a 92 passer rating with Gase in that season, which is not too far above the league average. So it wasn't like he was tremendous.
Like right at the league.
It was the best of his career, though. I believe.
But here's the last question before we move on. Hey, Jay, are you in good football shape right now?
Well, the good thing is I play quarterback, so I don't really have to be in that great of cardiovascular shape.
I can't wait. I cannot
wait. He got big laughs. He's joking around. I mean, he's having fun.
You're so excited about this guy.
He's in fine shape. He was also very engaging in that press conference. I thought he was unfairly maligned for his press conference.
It didn't matter what he would have done. He was going to get killed just because it's fun to make. And that's part of the fun of Jay Cutler being in the league. You get to make fun of Jay Cutler, and he doesn't care. And I'll tell you what. Now that he's back in the league, he once again takes the mantle. Best hair. Any quarterback in football.
Very good hair. And before we move on, I just want to put it out there. Yes, it's most likely a one-year thing. But if you're Ryan Tannehill, I feel like the starting quarterback job of the Dolphins is no longer yours. It's out of your hands. If Jay Cutler plays great this season, not saying that's going to happen. Well, let's say they just go to the playoffs. He plays well this season. He's played a lot more games with Adam Gase. It could turn into more than 1 year. Whether Cutler plays well or not, his contract, Tannehill, next year is going to be $20 million. They're going to have a decision to make whether they want to possibly trade him, whether they can really trust him, or whether they bring in competition, whether it's Cutler or a rookie or something like that. That is sort of out of his hands. Ryan Tannehill's turning 30 years old next year. He's not a young player anymore.
So you're saying he no longer controls his own destiny?
Oof. And by the way, we still don't know his season's over, but it's certainly everything is trending in that direction, and giving Jay Cutler this much money when you had a backup that you seemingly liked and Matt Moore really speaks volumes. So we'll see what happens. Jay, welcome back to the family. Moving on. Just when things couldn't get any more grim for the New York Jets this season, or heading into this what will be a lost season, you'd think, Quincy Enunwa, their slated number one wide receiver, heading to IR. Mike Garofolo reported this with a neck injury. He was held out of practices throughout the spring with a neck issue, and then it popped up again in their green and white scrimmage on Saturday, a non-contact situation where he went down. Turns out Todd Bowles announces that he has a bulging disc in the neck, needs surgery. The only upshot here in the silver lining is not believed to be one of those neck injuries that's career-threatening. He should be ready in 6 to 9 months. But now the Jets, it's getting grim, guys. I mean, it already was grim. But no, I'm talking about now I'm really, for the first time, when I saw this come across Twitter, I'm a little worried about 0-16. That's how bad it is. Robbie Anderson is now the Jets' number one wide receiver. Christian Hackenberg got basically kicked out of practice yesterday.
Christian Hackenberg is real?
For his inability to break a huddle properly, and is apparently not shown a lot. Josh McCown, it looks like he's going to end up getting the starting
job. Not
getting
any first-team reps, which is surprising, Hackenberg.
Yeah, he got a few today, I believe, but still Josh McCown is looks like everything is trending toward a situation where the Jets, they're not going to score any points. And with Robbie Anderson at number one, Wes, it's not going to get better after the news today.
I've heard of Robbie Anderson. I've never heard of this character, Sharon Peak.
Who caught a few passes last year.
You pronounced it correctly.
Number
That's
two
good.
Receiver.
He was in the mix in December. I was watching those Jets games.
He was playing.
That yeah, count, he caught yeah, like
that's
three
in
or
the
four.
Mix, I guess.
I mean, 0-16, I think the hot take would be that they might not go 0-16. They should be favored to go. They are less talented than the 2016 Browns, I think.
They have good defensive players in their front seven, and just the way football is, you figure you can luck into about two wins. I would think 2-14 is still the over-under, but this is the worst-looking wide receiver group heading into a season that you can remember. Sharon Peak, the number two receiver right now. Ardarius Stewart, a third-round pick this year, is the favorite to be the number three receiver. He hasn't even practiced fully. They're going to have to bring in a veteran. I honestly don't think you can. You can't go into the season with that group. Enunwa, I feel bad for him. He was entering a contract year, overachieving. Most fun player on the Jets offense, I would say, to watch, which is a low bar right now. But he was it. Who's the next best player?
Billy Powell's
next.
Kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, but that's
no,
bad.
But I mean, that says a lot. That says a lot. And here's the other part of it that I've never been less excited, and I've been around a while now. I've never been less excited about a Jets season than the one we're heading into. There's literally nothing to be excited about except for the draft, which isn't for months and months and months. And the biggest shame of all this now is because of the quarterback situation, because of the lack of playmakers on offense, now the injuries on top of it. How do you evaluate any of these guys? If this season, if at least you can, we'll evaluate.
The line's
what we have
a
on
mess
roster.
Too, by the way. Like if the rest of the team was good, we would be talking about how bad this offensive line is.
If the quarterbacks are bad and the line's bad and you don't have anybody to throw to, it all trickles over to the defense. If the offense is never on the field and the defense is getting gassed week after week after week, how are you going to even get a good look at those guys? There's a lot of young guys on this roster. It's as bad. The Jets are an embarrassment right now.
First team coordinator, first year coordinator too, John Morton, who's never done it before. I don't think we're just piling on when we say this is one of the worst offenses entering a season on paper, and they can always prove us wrong, that we've ever seen. There are no teams that go into a season this bad at so many different offensive positions.
On Twitter, I put it out there. Over under 3.5, how many games they score more than 14 points a season? Are they going to get the over under on that?
I mean, you got special teams.
Yeah, I'm
defensive
going over.
Touchdowns.
Going over.
All right. Well, everybody with the over. A little optimism ending this segment on the Jets. Moving on.
I'm saying 2 wins, too.
Yeah, well.
Fuck
we'll
up.
See. We'll see. Anquan Boldin got a job. He signed a 1-year deal with the Buffalo Bills. So he joins Tyrod Taylor, Sammy Watkins, and company Peter Schrager of Good Morning Football. First reported this on Monday. The deal is up to worth up to $4 million. Bolden, 37 years old this fall. His fifth team in 15 years in the league. Greg, are we going to get excited about this? I'm happy Anquan Boldin still wants to play and got a job, but is this going to be a signing that makes any ripples in the NFL in any tangible way?
No, I don't think it will. You know, as someone who loves watching Anquan Boldin play, one of my favorite players of his generation, I would have loved to see him stick around on the waiver wire, and I know he's not getting offers most likely, and he wants to play and see if anything better pops up.
Yeah, in 2022, in March, when Rap Sheet is on Total Access saying Anquan Boldin is only going to play for a contender, don't believe him. Anquan Boldin is a mercenary who will play
for
any team.
Well, he loves football. I think that's one of the reasons why we love watching him play. He loves his job. He wants to play football.
Great career, one of the most respected players, but don't believe him when he says he's only going to play for a contender.
Okay. He likes football. He also likes $4 million. And it doesn't make you a mercenary. It's like, oh, I could make millions of dollars to squeeze out another season?
Yeah.
I get it. But you would think if he had more options, he would sign with a team that isn't on a 17-year playoff drought that plays in the same division as the Patriots.
Well, they're
tough situation.
They're about as thin at receiver as any other team other than the Jets. Zay Jones is a rookie who's number two, so he's going to play a lot for this Bills team.
Moving on, the Cleveland Browns, they have an unsteady quarterback situation as well. And Brock Osweiler is going to get the first crack in this QB battle. He is the starter for the team's Thursday preseason opener against the Saints. Cody Kessler will come in next, followed by DeShone Kizer and then Kevin Hogan. I guess we'll see some snaps. This comes, Wes. Last week, we have it. It's documented. Mark all in on DeShone Kizer and the Browns in 2017. Is there anything to read into the fact that Brock Osweiler is starting the first preseason game?
Well, I think it's the reminder that if you blink in August, you miss a changing in the guard in training camp. Last week, Mary Kay Cabot of the Plain Dealer is saying that DeShone Kizer is way ahead of every other quarterback in practice. Friday and Saturday, he has bad scrimmages. Cody Kessler is not playing well. And all of a sudden, Brock Osweiler, who's only played with the second team offense, is starting the first preseason game because the other two guys aren't getting it done.
Well, one of my takeaways from going to these training camps is I don't trust any of the reporters' evaluations because I wouldn't trust my own. I think it's really hard I think even the coaches say they have to watch the film of practice before they say anything. There's so much that you don't know watching. So to say, okay, Kizer's way ahead, Hugh Jackson said it best. You would love to see one of these guys step up. It's kind of hard when you're splitting, you know, snaps four ways, and none of these guys have stepped up. It was basically what he's saying. And I think they have to be a little disappointed that Kizer and Kessler have not stood up, and that's the only reason why Brock is playing.
We haven't heard from Brock in a little while. Let's see what Brock had to say, a member of the Cleveland Browns now.
I could not be more excited to be a Cleveland Brown. I truly mean that. And it really starts with our ownership. You know, the Haslam family, Jimmy and Dee, they've just created a tremendous culture in this building.
This
and then,
guy.
You know, Sashi Brown has put a ton of great people in this place. And then, you know, going down to Coach Hugh Jackson and Coach Lee, our quarterback coach, they've made me a way better football player than I've ever been. They coach you hard every single day. They make it black and white as far far as in the meetings to what they expect at practice and what they expect in games. I love everything about this place. I love being a Brown.
All right,
and,
we
and
can
I'm
cut
just
it.
Very thankful.
Gee,
to be
yeah,
here.
Shut it down, Brock. All right, we get it.
I watched this. This is from an interview with Steve Wyche on NFL Network. And I swear the question, he sort of didn't answer the question at all. And he had these sort of these dead glassy eyes. And it really reminded me of a hostage video. Just, I am being treated very well here. They feed me breakfast. And
is he giving signs like very off camera, like writing down?
Save me. It's less of a hostage situation than he's one of the most disingenuous athletes I've ever heard. And that goes back to his introductory press conference with the Texans when nothing he said was credible.
Well, we're so hard on Brock, I'm starting to feel bad. I think this is just how he talks. You know what I mean?
He's extreme. I mean, if you remember back to the
like
Super Bowl.
He's like a real estate guy.
He's a little wooden.
When he got benched for Peyton at before Super Bowl 50, and he was getting a lot of credit for how professional he was, the dignity he was carrying himself with, being asked about being benched for a week straight. He's got this side of the game down, the polished media front.
But is it polished if it's not credible at all?
It's polished to a sheen, which at a certain point, that starts working against you for sure.
He looks like a ventriloquist dummy.
Yes,
guy.
Absolutely.
Moving on. Other quarterback news. Brock Osweiler's former team, the Denver Broncos, they're trying to figure out who's going to be their quarterback. It's a little messy right now because neither Trevor Siemian or Paxton Lynch have really stood out so far. At least that's what their own head coach has been telling people. But they now will start Trevor Siemian in the Broncos preseason opener against the Bears this Thursday. That game will be on NFL Network if you want to, you know, sit down on the couch, pop open a brewski, and check out the Week 1 Bears preseason game. And Paxton Lynch, he'll start the following week against the 49ers in Santa Clara. Coming from Vance Joseph. Greg, who's going to start? Who's going to start Week 3? Because that's when we find out probably who's going to be their Week 1 guy.
The practice reports are that Siemian is winning this job by default.
Never good.
To quote a Denver Post column over the weekend, that Paxton Lynch just is not showing any of the growth that they were hoping for. I think it's still very early, and the games are going to end up mattering more. And I still believe that they would love Paxton Lynch to be the one that does win the job.
Charles Robinson of Yahoo cited a source who watched video of every practice and said Siemian has outplayed Lynch in every single practice, which says a lot more about Lynch than Siemian, because by all accounts, Siemian has been pretty average in camp.
And he's learning a new offense. I mean, he's a young player who's not, you know, the most talented quarterback in the league. I like him, but he's a third-year player who hasn't started that many games, learning a new offense. So, you know, it's not easy for either of these guys right now.
In other news, Jalen Collins, the Falcons cornerback, has run into trouble once again. Collins, who started Super Bowl 51 for the Falcons, a cornerback, and was suspended 4 games for a violation of the performance-enhancing substance policy last year, was hit with a 10-game suspension on Monday to start 2017 for a repeat offense, the team announced. That means Collins won't be able to practice with the team after the preseason ends, cannot return until November 21st. Wes, is this a big loss for the Atlanta secondary?
No, and Thomas Dimitroff, their GM, has said twice this in the past couple of months, this is the deepest roster he's ever had. And this is another example of it. This is a guy who started in the Super Bowl. Tom Brady picked on him in the Super Bowl, and he was going to be their fourth quarter cornerback at best. He was not slated to have a big role at all.
But he played very well down the stretch, and I think was one of the reasons that defense played – into the Super Bowl, played well in the playoffs. He got one of these statements from the Falcons, which I always, it's interesting when they do this, where the team kind of buried him. They were just like, we're disappointed in Jalen for this happening again.
So 2 years in a row, that's terrible.
It's terrible. Yeah, they can live without him.
Come back to us, bro. In other news, retirement news, Vince Wolfork, who one of the great nose tackles of his generation, won 2 rings with the Patriots, finished his career in Houston. He retired on Monday, and he retired in a very 21st century manner via a paid sponsorship with Kingsford, the grill company, a video he released on his Twitter feed in which he said he was walking away, leaving the game, but still going to grill or something. I don't know. It was weird. But Vince Wilfork, 35 years old, former first-round pick Greg, where does he rank for you amongst your favorite Patriots of the Belichick era?
Well, that's a long, impressive, fun list.
Oh, I know. It must be.
He's up there. I mean, he's certainly one of my favorite defensive players just because of his personality, if nothing else. I mean, unless you're really breaking down the tape, you're not seeing all the good things that Wilfork does on a snap-to-snap basis, taking up two blockers, basically shutting down the run. Early in his career, teams just ran away from him. That's like the best compliment you can possibly have.
He is also responsible for the butt fumble on some level. And also, he probably has one of the longest for a non-quarterback gaps between Super Bowl championships, 2004 and then, what was it, 2015. So quite a – I don't know, is he Hall of Fame worthy, Wes?
My guess is he'll come just short, that he's in that Hall of Very Good range, just because nose tackles never get the credit that they deserve.
He has a couple – he didn't win it in 2015. I was checking. That was his – unfortunately, he had been some bad timing there, right?
Oh, and I thought he had two.
Am I crazy?
I read that. He left after the Seattle Super Bowl win, didn't he?
All right, I'm an idiot.
Hey, don't beat yourself up. It's hard to keep track of all these Super Bowl titles. I get it, Greg.
Everybody. I was thinking 2015 season. You're right. He had a couple second-team All-Pros, one first-team All-Pro. Generally, that's probably not quite enough. Five Pro Bowls. He'll be someone I think that's talked about, but probably not into the finalists.
Thing he was most famous for after leaving New England was the Hard Knocks episode where he showed up wearing the giant overalls with nothing else underneath, which was one of the classic Hard Knocks moments.
He's also wearing that in his retirement video too. Same getup.
Yeah, he brings it back in that video. He also says in that video, hanging up cleats but still smoking meats. And he wears a hat that just says ribs.
Like,
I feel like that's a challenge.
And Wes, how about that? He's famous for this because years ago his wife secretly videotaped.
Oh, Bianca. I mean, you know, before Giselle came along, this is one thing people will remember Vince Wilfork for, about as well-liked and does as much charity work as any Patriot. They were the first couple of the New England Patriots. That's all I'm saying. Bianca.
Hey, tell – who's it, Ted Johnson?
Yeah.
Tell Ted Johnson that too.
Oh, yeah.
He famously – stepped on the wrong toes. That way, do a web search if you want to learn a little bit more about why you do not mess with Vince Wilfork and his family. But Wes, Wilfork looks like a man who enjoys ribs. He looks like he knows his way around a smoker. Again, tremendous ribs delivered by you at Saturday at the party. But do you think perhaps that this man could challenge you to the throne for greatest ribs cooker in America?
I will tell you that in the past few months, I've made ribs that one person said was the best thing they've ever had in their mouth. And Saturday night, Jay Berg said,
"Yeah,
the best meat he's eaten in years of any kind." I think it's like cornerbacks in the NFL. Like, you have to, whether you're the best or not, you have to have the mindset that you're the best. And I don't think Vince Wilfork can outrib me.
I like the confidence. In fact, I love the confidence.
Well, what Wes did the other night with, I don't know, there was some brown sugar and you had a new cooking.
Don't give away any of the tips. Wilfork could be listening.
It was unbelievable, and it was so good. A few weeks back, I brought it home for my wife, who was a chef, you know, went to culinary school, and she put the seal of approval just like that. These are unbelievable ribs. And it says a lot about Wes on a party where he could not partake in the ribs. He has the generous heart enough to be cooking ribs, using up his energy all day to cook for the rest of us.
Well, that's says a lot putting about a positive spin on it. But I mean, in all honesty, I enjoy doing it. And in the past few months, I haven't had many weekends where I can get out and do something I enjoy. But it's a good way to spend the day.
If you love what you do, and for Wes that means cooking ribs, it will take you a long way. Vince, can you say you love him that much?
The way he dances while he's smoking.
I think he loves him.
Let's move on. Check in on a certain battle that the old Zeus has been tracking down in Tampa. Roberto Aguayo against Nick Folk. Quick rundown here. On Friday, Aguayo goes off in practice. Makes everything. Dirk Cutter saying, oh, we had a sit down, a come to Jesus meeting about, hey, just go out there and have fun. And Aguayo was telling the media, hey, I was thinking about it all wrong last year. I was too stressed out. I just got to let the game come to me.
If only he had said that last year, have fun.
Yeah,
it exactly. Never would have happened.
Meanwhile, Nicky Folk missed some kicks late last week. Monday, you got to be thinking, Cutter's thinking to himself, I think this is going to be settled. I think Robbie's figured it out because now the game's coming to him easily. He's just having fun out there like a kid. And what does he do? He yaks it up on Monday. Both Folk and Aguayo missed kicks on the skinny field goal post. Folk clanged one off the left right upright. This is all according to Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Aguayo missed wide right. They both then missed on regulation goal posts.
Whoa.
Aguayo hooking a kick badly to the left. And then finally, Aguayo made one from about 50 yards out that Folk then missed. And then Dirk Cutter, I'll say this about Dirk Cutter, the Bucs coach. He is leaning into this. He is sucked in as I am in this. Instead of like being a little like, you know, having a little bit of a poker face going on, he lives and dies by every Bucks practice talking about. He loves talking about this.
For the skinny goalpost is a great move.
Yeah.
For the competition, you got to go to the skinny goalpost.
Here's his quote. This is how pumped up Cutter is about this thing. Asked about the practice of the two men. Not too good. Not too good. It's one day on, one day off. Whatever they ate for breakfast today, off the menu. Because that wasn't it. Neither of them was very good today. It's a simple process, okay? You're a kicker in the NFL. Inside 50 yards, you've got to make your kicks. And I'm not being a hard ass or anything. That's just what it is in this league. They know it. I know it. Everyone here knows it.
Aguayo. Folk. So, you guys are aware of the stakes here, right? Like, the coach is watching and everything. Guys?
Such an unforgiving position in sports. When you listened to Aguayo late last week, I got the sense like he was 98% convinced of what he was saying, and there was a 2% doubt in his mind that he wasn't. Mm. He's not willing to go to that dark place, but it's there. Mm.
And finally,
Hard Knocks starts, by the way, this week.
Yeah, starts.
Prediction, Dirk Cotter is going to be a sneaky star here. We're gonna like Dirk Cotter more than we expect.
It's a return engagement for Cutter. He was involved with the Falcon season, which was not very memorable. Gets another shot here. Finally, the Pro Football Hall of Fame held their induction ceremony over the weekend. Such luminaries inducted included LaDainian Tomlinson, Jason Taylor, Jerry Jones, Terrell Davis, Kurt Warner. Morton Anderson got in. Good for you, Morton. Who else? Am I missing anyone?
Kenny Easley. Taylor, did you say?
I said Taylor. It was a celebration. Let's hear a little bit, by the way, Wes, you mentioned this in our little pre-prod meeting. Kurt Warner talking about his journey and called out somebody that maybe you wouldn't have expected to hear his name at a Hall of Fame induction speech.
But I would like to recognize one teammate who had a more profound impact on me than any other, Trent Green.
Give it up, guys. Jesus.
You know, our paths crossed in the most incredible of ways, and I acknowledge you could easily be the one standing up here tonight. But the class that you showed while dealing with the toughest of situations is etched in my mind. Your willingness to share your football secrets so I could succeed was incredibly valuable. But the character you displayed and the way you modeled the definition of teammate was priceless.
I should preface that by saying what the backstory is. I guess it's football lore at this point, but if you don't know, if you're a younger fan, Trent Green was supposed to be the starter for the St. Louis Rams in the 1999 season, blew out his ACL in the middle of the preseason. Dick Vermeil gave his famous press conference in which he said the team will rally around Kurt Warner, who was an Arena League football quarterback, who then went on to have one of the great seasons all time by a quarterback. That entire offense became known as the greatest show on turf, Wes. But Trent Green getting the shout out there. Any other takeaways from that or the rest of the ceremony?
Yeah, the takeaway for me, I mean, Kurt Warner is being self-deprecating there to a pretty large degree. But it just drives home the point how many Hall of Famers are in the Hall of Fame because of surrounding talent, scheme, coaching, landing in the exact right place. Trent Green the next year started 5 games when Kurt Warner was injured and had a higher passer rating than Kurt Warner. He could have been statistically one of the best quarterbacks of that generation had he stayed healthy, not blown out his ACL, and thrown passes to Torrey Holt, Isaac Bruce, Azahir Akeem, and Mike Martz's offense.
I mean, heck, he started to, you know, roll up fourth 4,500-yard seasons at a time when there wasn't as many passing yards in Kansas City. So you're right. He could have done great there. I like the Hall of Fame induction ceremony. You know, it's kind of an event. You know, if you got to really be into football, I think, to sit and watch and really get into. But if you love football, I think it's a great event. But I do think they have lost the plot with how long it is. It's outrageous how long the speeches are. And I don't know how you fix that, because you want everyone to get their time in and thank everyone they want. But it was over 4 hours. I think they averaged almost – it was close to an average of 30 minutes of speech. And even wow. comparing it to some of the ceremonies, I'm thinking of one that I went to and I covered it for a long time. It's almost double the ceremony right now than what it was 6 or 7 years ago. They were doing 15 to 20 minute speeches. You know, maybe one guy would really go crazy. You know, Jerry Jones, who was great, had one of the best ones, I thought, of the night. We did 36 minutes, you know, and a lot over 30 minutes. And so maybe it's just an event for all the people there, and that's fine. But it's not, I don't know, it's not a TV event when it's 4.5 hours.
That's fair. They got to tighten that up. By the way, Jane Slater reported on NFL Network, I think I heard this correctly, that Jerry Jones's Friday night party the night before the induction cost the team or cost the owner $15 million?
I did a triple take and had to ask if million was the right word there. $15 million party. That's a bacchanalia.
How about
Justin Timberlake played, so maybe that's costing, what, a couple million right there? Whew. I don't know.
How about you just get a DJ to play Justin Timberlake, throw a $1 million party, and then give $14 million to some of the underprivileged youth of the Dallas area.
It is a little, like, disgusting.
Just an option, another option.
It's a little much. Jerry Jones thanked Jimmy Johnson. That was a notable moment. I thought the Chargers fans who showed up booing Dean Spanos when LaDainian Tomlinson, you know, thanked Spanos. LaDainian Tomlinson had a great speech, but that stuck in my head as kind of a memorable, real thing that actually happened. Morton Anderson was great. I mean, just to hear his story. Came here as an exchange student for 8 months, and they just were like, hey, let's put the foreign kid out there, you know, just to live here for like 7 months and
make
like
fun of him for
never,
a while.
Never left. Yeah. No, let's put the foreign kid out there. He must be good at kicking. And then he's in the Hall
Racist.
Of Fame 20 years later.
Well, guys who are the age of me and Mark Sessler remember when most of
very
the
old.
Most of the good kickers in the league in the late 70s and early 80s were born outside the United States because they were the only soccer-style kickers.
These guys were so confused they weren't even wearing two shoes. It was just a whole thing going on back in the 70s and 80s. That's what's happening in the news. New Era. Oh, yeah. Wes is wearing a New Era hat today because he's got a bald head and it's cold.
There is a wind chill in this
it's
building.
It's freezing in this place.
They fixed the
air
conditioning.
People like you who just complain.
No. First of all, come on. Get it together. The air conditioning here was broken for 2 years. NFL Media, it's like a...
I liked it.
What is this, how many billion dollars? $15 billion company? And finally, they fixed it. They airlifted in a new air conditioning unit. So now, instead of it being 80 degrees in the newsroom...
How literal.
It's, you know, 63 degrees. Layer up. That's not even a hot take. Now I'm the bad guy.
They airlifted the air conditioner.
They did. There's a crane or something. New Era's.
Like a Mitch Hedberg joke.
A New Era's NFL training collection has a great combination of innovative performance and style with features like UV protection, because you could always layer up. That's what I was saying to Greg. Greg has been complaining about this all day. When you're cold, you can layer up.
Yeah, but you don't want to be at your workplace freezing. What fun is that?
If you're hot, you can't.
Hey,
what are you going to do?
But when you go outside, it's 85 degrees, so then you're wearing your sweatshirt, and it's none of it makes sense.
Moisture wicking and cooling technology. There's no reason you shouldn't make the New Era NFL Training Collection a part of your daily attire. Available at retailers like Lids, NFLShop.com, and, yep, Dick's Sporting Goods in your favorite team.
I got to tell you, I like this hat.
It's a Bucks hat that Wes is wearing. That's the other interesting tidbit here. Nice angle.
Well, is this the first hat that Sully took out of the Bucks?
It's the Great Holy War.
And Hard Knocks is this week. A little tip of the cap to Hard Knocks.
It's a great
literal
holy
tip
wear
of the cap.
Between Wes, Team Winston, and Greg, Team Mariota, for the future of the NFL. So
flip those. Yeah, yeah.
Is that what I had it the other way around?
Yeah, Greg's Team
other
Winston.
Way around. My bad. Anyway, you are, Wes, it's kind of a subversive move by you here.
And also, I I loathe the Buccaneers uniforms, especially the rogue uniforms, which are vomit inducing literally when you have a hangover.
The digital alarm clock uniform.
But this hat looks sharp. I kind of like the red. It goes good with the white shirt here. If you
don't want it, I'll take it home. My daughter Alice is strangely likes the Buccaneers. I think she just likes the logo of the Pirates.
I don't want to be taking clothing out of your daughter's pocket, but I might need this the rest of the day.
Guys, there's literally 500 hats in the closet behind Sully that we have to figure out what to do with them. All right. Winners and losers of training camp ellipses so far. Now,
hey, how can you make any type of judgment like that? Huh? Your boots aren't on the ground. How would you know it? Hey, you never played the game.
Whatever. Get over yourself.
Who was that? An impression of?
That's society.
Okay.
That's the football cognoscenti. Coming at us a little bit sometimes.
I think that's more like the average idiot on Twitter.
Yeah, kind of. That's what it is. But we watch things on television. We read things on the internet. And from that, we make judgment calls. And that's the basis of Greg's debrief.
I mean, people lose jobs. People get jobs. Seasons end. Seasons begin. Signings happen. You know, all these things are happening.
Greg has his eyes. He's been at a couple practices. He's seen things that have become part of his debrief. But anyway, so winners and losers. So let's go around the horn here a couple times through. Greg, let's start with you, buddy, because, yes, you could check it out at NFL.com/debrief. Debrief, your weekly column. Give me a winner or a loser, whatever you want to start with.
Now let's start with a couple of losers. Well, that just sounds so hard because the number one
couple total wastos.
That's not what I'm getting at. Because the number one overall picks in the 2011 and 2012 draft are two of my very favorite players in the NFL to watch, and yet the fact that Cam Newton has not thrown a football in practice for 8 straight days now, to me, has been a strangely underplayed storyline. Everyone there says, oh, it's fine. It's no big deal. Cam Newton started camp with absolutely no restrictions, practiced for 4 days, and now has been out for 8 days since. He didn't practice all offseason. They're trying to change their whole offensive identity. One of the key pieces for that offensive identity is Curtis Samuel, a second-round pick, who, by the way, got injured on the very first day of training camp and has not practiced 1 day since.
Woof.
So the Panthers in general and this whole transition with Cam Newton, to me, I think you should be worried. Because, okay, maybe he'll come back in a week and everything will be smooth sailing after that, and maybe I'm wrong. But a shoulder surgery is a really serious thing, and I think this last week points out that it's not always going to be a smooth road back, and they're missing a lot of really valuable time installing the offense. And I think if you're a Colts fan with Andrew Luck, you entered training camp not knowing anything, and you know even less now. He has not been close to practicing, and we're 2 weeks in.
The fact that Luck, he a complete mystery, and you wrote about it in your column that, you know, just the fact, you know, Pagano is trying to take positives out of the fact that he was merely on the sideline watching his teammates over the weekend as a minor sign of progress, just shows how much in the fog they are right now, it seems, about what this guy's going to be able to give to him. You're right. Both those cases, the shoulder thing, it's scary.
Yeah, if you're a Colts fan and you want to look on the optimistic side, that their general manager, Chris Ballard, continues to
What's
say
your favorite type of frogs? That guy
continues to insist that Luck will be ready for week one.
Well, you got to parse his words a little. He said he won't be on PUP list, that they're not going to do that. I don't know if that's saying he's going to be ready for week one.
Doesn't
I think
he
he's
start
just,
practicing though soon.
Right. I think that's just saying we're not putting him on the PUP list. So that would indicate they think he'll be ready in the first 5 weeks for sure. I don't know. Yeah. You would think he would need to start practicing. And I think Cam's injury points out, okay, just because you return to practice doesn't mean you're ready to play or that you're going to have the same arm strength, or, you know, a lot of people watching Cam Newton's practice said he wasn't throwing deep yet. It's just, it's a worrisome factor for two teams kind of up in the air right now.
Still, today's August 7th.
It's early.
So you don't want to go crazy, but if Luck and Newton, it would be equally alarming if Newton was out for another week after this, but they have to probably start getting in the mix by mid, heading into late August to have a shot to start week one. But we'll see.
Because you don't just want Cam Newton back. You want Cam Newton playing as well as Cam Newton can. You know, like, an ineffective Cam Newton is not going to be fun to watch either if he's back for week one.
Why does Kelvin Benjamin, by the way, have wobbly legs?
Is that a medical term?
That was, yeah, that he did not participate in the fan fest or some of the team drills, and they said he had a couple days of wobbly legs.
You're a horse, they shoot you.
I don't like the sound. Wes, give me a winner or maybe a winner.
Yeah. Sorry for starting negative.
We want to counterbalance that. Here's one that is not in Greg's article, and I don't think a lot of people are talking about it. Kirk Cousins. Hmm. In March, everybody assumed he's going to have a down year because DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon, two established receivers, 2,000-yard guys, leave the organization. I think the guys they have now, even though they're younger and the floor is lower, the ceiling is higher. I think Terrell Pryor is showing that he's going to be a real number one receiver, a Pro Bowl type of guy. Josh Doctson just came down with day-to-day hamstring but has been making plays in training camp. And, you know, all this talk about Jamison Crowder in the offseason, he might be their number three guy because Doctson is a first-round draft pick, very talented. And Terrell Pryor, I think, is ready to make that leap to Pro Bowl. So I think Kirk Cousins is in great shape.
Mm. This is why I should consult with Wes before I do these winners and losers columns. Should have put that in there.
What about Sean McVay not being around? Bother you at all?
It's a fair point because I really think he's a smart guy, but that's Jay Gruden's offense.
You read, there's always this Jerry Brewer column in the Washington Post on Pryor, and after reading that, I don't know, I was convinced, kind of what you're saying, that he is ready to take another step. We forget that this guy can get a lot better.
And, again, what do we not know? Why did the Cleveland Browns say, let's get out of this investment now?
Well, they offered him $8 million a year.
Well, you've been hinting for a year that there's a lot of smoke there, so there's got to be some fire, right?
I can't say, you know, triple sources.
Yeah, this isn't source, but this is more your instincts here.
No, it's beyond that. It's beyond that. I really would love to know what actually spooked the Browns from really aggressive. If this guy is going to break out the way you think could happen this year, it's remarkable that the Browns would let him get away. But we'll see. We'll see. I'll throw, let's see. I don't want to go. Okay, let's do another winner. You brought up Terrell Pryor. I'll throw out Nelson Agholor. And this guy is getting a lot of pop right now. Sessler said something I liked on the Friday show, so I'm gonna borrow a Sesslerism here. Wishcast. Is it a little bit wishcasting by the Eagles now? And we're going to get to a DJ report as well in a second, but that based on strong spring practices and before we even get to the preseason, this idea now that he's going to potentially just now make this leap and become the guy that they've been waiting for 3 years basically for him to become. So winner in the sense that everybody seems to think Nelson Agholor is now going to be a hot shot this season, but also a little dollop of skepticism on my part. Just I want to see him actually playing some games and making some plays against opponents. I'd say DJ. Daniel Jeremiah.
I'm not going to be ignored, Dan.
Is a winner because he makes the comment on apparently he has a podcast on this network, but yeah, he said
the Moving Sticks podcast.
Moving the Sticks podcast. He
Moving in with the Sticks. He's podcast with Bucky Brooks.
Hey, Sticks, come on in. Anyway, he said that he was certain that Nelson Agholor was going to get some work out in the slot. What does that mean for Jordan Matthews? And then Matthews starts sniping at DJ a little bit. And DJ is too nice a guy to go back, clap back at Jordan Matthews. And I won't do it on his behalf, but I'll say Jordan Matthews being ultra sensitive about it, DJ very plugged into the Eagles. Eagles wanted DJ bad to get to work with them. He used to work in that building. He probably knows what he's talking about in this case.
Well, two things on this. Agholor, since all this came out, keeps separating from defensive backs better than any receiver on the Eagles roster and also is starting to drop the ball again.
Mm. But his one telling thing, and this was on Monday, they asked the offensive coordinator about it, and he essentially admitted, well, yeah, our plans are going to be a little different in the slot.
Well, yeah,
So that they're now saying it, you know, and they're saying everything's a competition right now. They were asking, well, what about Jordan Matthews? He said everything's a competition now. So now, you know, they're coming out publicly and more or less confirming what DJ said.
Well, then while we're on it, let's throw Jordan Matthews into the losers.
Yeah.
Because they're turning him into the Michael Kendricks of the offensive side of the ball.
Oh, no.
What's his role?
Well, I think his role might be getting traded.
Oh, no. Is Jordan Matthews about to become the number one wide receiver of the Jets for, like, a third-round pick?
Or the Texans. The Bills were another one that came to mind. The Texans could really use a receiver, and I think that could be a fit. I mean, they got Braxton Miller.
Yeah,
right?
But if you think about – if you go through team by team, who needs a slot receiver? And there are not many teams at all.
Texans, though.
But Braxton Miller's a slot receiver. That's where he's been training since they drafted him.
But is he – between him and Jalen Strong, I mean, that is a bad 2-3 combo, I feel like. It's just throwing it out there.
Wes, I mean, Greg, you're up.
Well, and I did want to stick up for DJ, by the way, quickly. You know, because he went after him for his mock draft accuracy.
Oh, right, right.
And, you know, while researching for this Winners and Losers, I found some random Eagles article that was like, well, actually – and they went through DJ's – apparently they score the mock drafts for accuracy, and they showed
they're like
actually DJ's been performing at a very high level for four straight years. Sorry, Jordan Matthews, you got banged.
All right, very good. All right, you're up, Greg.
I'm gonna give another winner, one that wasn't in the column. You know, just a little extra here for our podcast listeners.
Hey, bro, how you distribute content.
Jimmy Graham has not been talked about much on this podcast for a long time, but I thought it was really telling that Pete Carroll said how limited he was in terms of what they could do with him in practice last year, that they were careful with him because he was coming back from that surgery, and yet he was still pretty effective on the field. And from the reports at Seahawks training camp, the fact he's down 15 to 20 pounds and people just saying that he's looking really good and he's a full go, practicing fully every day, I feel good about Jimmy Graham. If you're drafting in fantasy leagues, I like a little Jimmy Graham comeback this year.
The coolest thing about Jimmy Graham is that some days in training camp, he flies his own plane and lands it right there on the shores of Lake Washington and shows up the training camp like that.
What?
Yeah, it's kind of a badass.
I didn't know this.
Yeah.
Oh, then you're definitely a winner. A winner just for that.
That's a baller move.
It's true. It's true. Hey, he ruptured his patellar tendon, which is one of the worst injuries you could have. He beat the timetable, came back last year, was the same kind of a red zone dude that could do damage, had nice numbers. He makes sense. Now, we've talked about that injury a lot. Will he ever get back to being the same type of Jimmy Graham? Unknown, but it seems to be trending in the right direction. Losing weight probably helps that. Wes, give us one.
Another guy not on Greg's list.
Didn't think you guys would pick off the list anyhow.
You know, Dirk Cutter likes to brag about how he's doing this whole carrot and stick routine with Doug Martin. Do you know who did the best carrot routine throughout the offseason? Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch with Carlos Hyde. Comes into camp the best shape of his life. Everybody's talking about how he's going to lose his job. He's one of the best players on the field in their training camp, and he's in a great offense for his talent. I think Carlos Hyde is going to have a career year this year.
A not-so-subtle shot across Greg's bow. Your response, Greg?
You know, maybe I got some bad information. Maybe they were putting it out there that he needed to show up to camp. You know, they were trying to motivate
that guy. Part of the carrot routine was getting NFL insiders involved.
And I'm not taking the L on that until we're at week one and he hasn't been traded.
Fair.
Who knows? Maybe they will trade him.
I don't think that you asked Evan Silva to run with that report either.
It's fair.
He actually did check with me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sure, go. Why not?
I'm going to give a loser, then and then kind of a speed round, quick winner, and you guys could do one more quick as well. My loser is Colin Kaepernick. We don't need to go into deep dive on this, but he couldn't get the job in Baltimore. In fact, we might see another missive by the Ravens at some point, an update on their situation about whether they've made a decision or not. But you would think at this point, if it hasn't happened yet, it's not going to happen in Baltimore. Miami, it doesn't look like he was ever really considered because they quickly pounced on Jay Cutler as their guy. I know, Greg, you talked about the Seahawks, maybe.
I think the Seahawks could make sense. Trevon Boykin reportedly not playing well at all at Seahawks camp. So,
but if it's not the Seahawks, then who is it? He might actually not get a job, which I thought all along he would eventually get a job, but now I would say it's more likely he doesn't. We'll see about that. And then my winner, we brought them up a little earlier, but Tom Savage, I think, is a winner so far because Tom Savage if I had to guess one guy coming out of the draft who was in greatest danger of losing a quarterback competition to a rookie, I would have said it was him with them selecting Deshaun Watson and the amount of hype around that pick and the way ownership is in Houston. I thought that Savage was in a lot of trouble, but apparently, at least heading into the preseason, everyone says that Tom Savage is ahead on the cards. DeAndre Hopkins is all amped up about him, calling him a franchise quarterback. You could not have asked for a better start to training camp in terms of what people are saying about you and how you're playing than Tom Savage, who might be real.
If the practice reports are right, they've both played well. That Watson has come in and been a little better than expected, and Savage has just is getting better with the competition.
All right, Greg, one more.
All right, how about a couple losers? The Bay Area Smiths. How about that for connecting two things that don't make any sense? Malcolm Smith signs a big free agent deal in San Francisco, was the one guy that knew that defense that was supposed to help teach it. He's now out for the season. Sean Smith in Oakland, who is guaranteed more than $9 million this year, or he might be on the way out, was demoted to second string cornerback, number four cornerback on the team behind an undrafted rookie and a second-year player, or third-year player in TJ Carey. This is before their first-round pick is even back on the field. They demoted Sean Smith for playing poorly. So if that money wasn't guaranteed, he might be on the way out.
Wes.
They've got him playing nickel linebacker.
They had him, yeah. Then the third or fourth thing, they're just like trying to find something for him to do.
It's the custodian.
This is a good one that is on Greg's list. The 2017 Chargers rookie draft class. You could argue, strong argument, they had the best 2016 rookie class. Joey Bosa, Hunter Henry, Jatavis Brown, kicker, punter, fullback, Derek Watt. They had a really impactful draft class. They've already lost their first-round pick and, what, their second or third-round pick?
Second-round pick.
Second-round pick from this year's draft. This is a very inauspicious beginning for the Chargers draft class.
Very true. All right, there you go. Those are the takeaways from the early portion of training camp. The preseason kicks off. Does the Hall of Fame game technically count as a preseason game, or
yeah,
is it a standalone entity? How do they break ties of the preseason standings then?
If you go 5-0, you're the champ.
Damn.
You're the champ.
What an advantage for America's team. big 2018 win last week. Now it looms even larger now that I know it's technically part of the standings. They'll win. Even if another team goes undefeated, they win by half a game.
Well, you got to win four more, but yeah.
Hey, halfway there. 20% home, baby. Anyway, we'll be back on Wednesday. I was saying was preseason.
Halfway there, 20% home, baby. Dan Hansis, 39 in a state-mandated math test.
It was a 39, and I thought maybe it was unfair to me. From a coal town, it was not right. Preseason starts in earnest on Thursday. That's what I was trying to get to. So we'll be talking about what we see in those games on Friday. On Wednesday, we'll be back. Hard Knocks premieres Tuesday. All the other NFL news fit to talk about. Make sure you give us a check in on the iTunes if you haven't. Give us the 5-star ratings, the comments. We might even talk about your comment on this very podcast if it's witty enough or smarmy enough or downright rude.
Don't forget, you can
rude.
Watch Wednesday's show.
And you can watch Wednesday's show, of course. That's our video show. But we'll talk about that when we get to it. That's it for today. This is Dan Hansen signing off for the mailman and the erstwhile boss. Of course, it's Sully behind the glass. Until Wednesday.